Welcome back, everybody. I'm Cass Piancy, and I am here, as usual, with my partner in crime, Bennett Tomlin. Today, we are going over my article that I wrote a few years ago now that is about a time I went to Hong Kong to try to find Bitfinex and Tether. It's my favorite story that I've ever written. It's what I love to do the most, which is go and try to find things out on the ground. I'm looking forward to talking about it and describing it.
So, Cass, why did you fly to Hong Kong looking for Bitfinex?
So Bitfinex and Tether and their associated companies are a global conglomeration of nonsense, right? These guys exist in the British Virgin Islands, they exist in Taiwan, they exist in Hong Kong, they exist in Switzerland, in London, in a million places. But the harder we looked, you, me, Bitfinex, 8coin, the more it was revealed that all of these companies, the one thing they had in common was that they had an address in Hong Kong. So my best bet, if I was going to try to find them, was to go to the place where all of their offices existed. I don't know if it's important to explain to people what Tether and Bitfinex mean to me and you and us. It started us on this venture into cryptocurrency and fraud and scams and exit scams and hacks. They are why I'm so obsessed with this now. Tether is a $60 billion stablecoin now, and Bitfinex is one of the exchange leaders. It's dropped off big time over the past several years, but it's one of the bigger exchanges, and I just wanted to find them. That's the shorter answer.
So, you fly to Hong Kong looking for these incredibly important companies to the cryptocurrency space. You head off, first looking for the offices of iFinex, one of the companies that operates the Bitfinex platform. And of course, you found it well-staffed by competent professionals who were running a massive exchange, of course.
Yeah, the first place that my friend and I, Griff, went to was a place in a very well-known tower in Hong Kong called the Bank of America Tower. It's this very central location within the financial district of Hong Kong. A bunch of walkways flow into and out of it. It's just a hub of activity during the normal workday. It was really easy for us to get past all of the guards, and we went to the appropriate floor. And when we got there, it wasn't professionals. It was a construction site. There was no one there, and that was it.
Well, I'm sure when you headed out to one of their other addresses to find, like, where Bitfinex Technology was headquartered, of course, there you would find the expected, like, JLVDV, the CEO of Bitfinex, had to be in the office when you went to check that out.
To be honest, by this time, I went to Hong Kong under the suspicion that I wasn't going to find anything. So I was pretty sure that I would walk away empty-handed. I wasn't very concerned that I would actually stumble upon anything until my friend Griffin was like, so what are you going to ask them if they're there? And it just dawned on me like, oh, man, I don't know what I'm going to ask. And I don't even know how I'm going to react if we actually stumble into Bitfinex headquarters. Thankfully, that's not what we stumbled into. What we found on the other side of the door for J&K Holdings Limited, I think was the name of the company, was two Chinese women who knew English. And when I asked them if anyone worked there from Bitfinex, if anyone worked there from Tether, she said no. And then I asked if they worked with them, and she said, they send us paperwork from time to time. This certainly was not the place if you were, say, a customer who feels like you've gotten screwed and need your support ticket answered. It is not the place you would go to.
Okay, fine. So Bitfinex doesn't have any offices in Hong Kong, and you've checked out these two buildings already, but there was, of course, the third address for Tether. And you had to finish out the loop. And that one was surprising.
It wasn't. But it was a beautiful building. It was this 1980s kind of chic marine green blue building. And there was a guard manning the station. And he asked us questions before he let us through. And it just felt like, oh, man, maybe this could actually be the place. But when we got up there, the woman made it clear that she was uncomfortable with the questions that I was proposing. And the more I tried to ask, so I started with the same kind of questions, like, is this Tether headquarters? It's listed as Tether headquarters. No. Okay, have you ever worked with Tether? And it became these kind of awkward pauses of like, they're not here. I wasn't sure It felt like she knew more than she was letting on, but I don't know what that means. It certainly wasn't the Tether headquarters.
And so this one would have been the sign that said Proxy Management Consultants Limited. So let's talk about now for people, why does Bitfinex and Tether have so many addresses, yet no employees at any of them?
Yeah, well, these obviously aren't branches or headquarters. What these all are the Hong Kong version of a P.O. box, where you have these people accepting mail on behalf of you. The business is incorporated on behalf of you. You can skirt a lot of rules and regulations in Hong Kong. There's a lot of places like this, and you'll see it's a common occurrence in corporate culture in general. But I think it's extra common when it comes to cryptocurrency. And we do see them do very specific things. Like, they are often located in British Virgin Islands, the Caymans, Panama, places that are known for being shelters for money laundering and tax evasion havens.
All these addresses you went to check out were never really Bitfinex offices or addresses or places of business in any meaningful sense, in the same way that Coinbase is not headquartered in Delaware where their corporation was created.
But the opposite, while Coinbase is suggesting they don't have a headquarters, the reality is that if there's an exit scam and all of the funds on Coinbase disappear, everyone knows they can go to San Francisco, where all of the employees for Coinbase who aren't remote work. So the idea that there isn't a headquarters for Coinbase, that's bullshit, man. And the same for any of these things. Like, if Gemini exit scam tomorrow, you can go to New York, go find me Bitfinex and Tether. They walk away with all of your money. Where are you going? How are you getting it back?
I mean, we'd probably have to go somewhere in... JL's probably still over in, what, Hong Kong or Singapore? Juan Carlos somewhere in France, maybe? Paolo might be in France or in Italy. I honestly don't even know where they are, and I follow this stuff obsessively.
Yeah, yeah, which is wild. These are the executives of some of the largest cryptocurrency companies in the world, and people just don't even know where they exist. At the end of the day, you know, they argue that doesn't matter. And I guess there's a truth to that, because there is no headquarters. There's no place to go and level a complaint against them. I guess you can bring a lawsuit in the British Virgin Islands. Everything is purposely opaque.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, about how a lot of cryptocurrency businesses rely on this kind of almost regulatory obscurity and arbitrage, where they're trying to set up different parts of their business through these various thin shell companies across as many jurisdictions as possible. One, to make it hard to bring a suit. Two, to take advantage of any little advantage they can get in those places. And three, because they don't want a single place where you can point to and say, that's Bitfinex, that's Coinbase, that's whoever.
Which obviously, like, for some company like Coinbase, that just doesn't work. But when you're Binance and CZ is obviously king, you can say there's no offices or headquarters, but I guess if they just catch CZ, that kind of does it, doesn't it?
Yeah, if CZ gets compromised, I can't imagine Binance is in a great position, which is honestly probably part of the reason why JLVDV maintains such a low profile, because he does live in a politically contentious area with rapidly changing rules and regulations surrounding finance and cryptocurrencies in general. So it's probably to his advantage that he's very rarely seen in public and almost never makes statements or things like that.
Yeah, and I don't know what Juan Carlos' deal is.
He used to be heard from all the time, too. Like, Juan Carlo used to be the customer support on Bitcoin Talk and would only sometimes call his customers morons. I think it's all just trying to craft a narrative that Bitfinex and Tether are a modern financial company. The idea of having an office full of employees is last century. We can be so much more efficient by recruiting around the globe for the best possible talent. And so they create this story, right, that this is the best way to run their business, when in reality, the reason they're doing this way is so they can set up these different shell corporations, so they can take advantage of these different regulations and try to enact that. And so the story they're telling, the narrative about decentralization, is bullshit. It's meant to cover up the fact that they're trying to take advantage of looser financial regulations.
Without something like the Panama Papers in a crypto form or something, I just don't know how you put a stop to that, because these people can churn up 100 different shell corporations and dissolve them the next week. And it would take us years to catch up.
Yeah, it does. That was part of the way Crypto Capital Corp survived as long as it did, is they just kept creating new shell corporations, and they were willing to continually lie to banks and say, what do you mean? This is a real estate company. What do you mean? This is a mining company. Sure, these transactions look like they're from cryptocurrency exchanges, but we're a real estate company. Oh no, there goes that account. Luckily, we've got two more we started this week.
And there's always going to be somebody who's willing to do that for them. And we've talked about ways to shut down Tether and Bitfinex before, so we don't need to rehash that. But I do think that offshore incorporation and offshore banking is probably more useful and more dangerous for criminals than cryptocurrency could possibly ever be.
It's less easily traceable than like the major cryptocurrencies, right? Like you and I have tracked major important events on the Bitcoin and Ethereum blockchain, and we could see them happening because you can see the transactions. You shovel money through three shell corporations across three different countries, several different banks. We lose the ability to track that, to have any insight into that. And you need subpoena power, and you need subpoena power across multiple jurisdictions.
Yeah, I mean, the Enron guy, Liu Pai, who's one of the only ones who didn't get charged, I've been looking into him, and he has the Liu Pai Foundation in Texas, which I can't legally acquire any information about a 501c3. There's no way for me to acquire how much money gets donated to them every year, by whom, and for what. But it is a registered charity and foundation, and it is 501c3, which is just... That's America, man. You don't have to go across the globe to find the exact kind of thing that's happening now, that's happening before in Hong Kong and Panama and British Virgin Islands, happening now in places like Nevada and Delaware, Montana, Texas, Wyoming, right? All of these places now are actually adopting the system of offshore incorporation and offshore banking. While it's not obviously offshore, I'm just saying it's like, yeah, it just changes the dynamic fully.
Individuals can choose whether or not they want to provide money or whatever to corporations that use these kind of techniques, but shell corporations and using stuff like that to launder money is still an effective tactic used by criminals. And
yeah, and a lot of this stuff, you go in there and all of these companies are dissolved and gone. You can follow these guys only as long as the trail is hot. And as soon as it goes, even I'll never forget that Ravid Yosef thing where I tracked her and stupidly announced it that I was tracking her in Israel. And then I lost the trail because I spoke about it publicly. So I think it's really easy for researchers and journalists and writers to be looking into something, be right there and feel like you're so close to seeing how the ugly underbelly of these industries work. And I think crypto is just like so entwined with offshore incorporation and offshore banking. That underbelly is much even seedier than cryptocurrency. And it has been really eye-opening for me.
My first time really looking into the Panama Papers and the Paradise Papers was when we were first looking into Bitfinex and Tether. And we saw that Phil Potter and Juan Carlo and all them incorporated both of these two companies down there. And it sits with me that there's a whole bunch of information that you and I specifically have learned from those documents about Crypto Capital Corp, about Bitfinex, about Tether, about these important multi-billion-dollar entities that we would not have known if the Mossack Fonseca papers and the Appleby papers hadn't been leaked, if the Panama Paradise papers hadn't come out.
People don't understand this. I think it's true. People have no idea that to find out information on a Bahamas-based company or a British Virgin Islands-based company, you have to pay money. Like, you have to pay a significant chunk of change. So these places make it so that journalists and researchers and armchair detectives like can't possibly afford to actually find out all the information on your company. And it's all of them. It's Singapore, it's British Virgin Islands, it's Puerto Rico, like it's all of them. They do this on purpose.
Yeah. Hong Kong is a little bit better. I've bought from Hong Kong before, and theirs are at least a lot cheaper than British Virgin Islands. But you do need to call up your credit card company first and go, hey, I'm about to be processing several somewhat small transactions to this weird Hong Kong-based credit card processing company. That's intentional. Don't freeze my card. Just as an aside.
Yeah, hopefully there's some... I think armchair detectives can often provide a good resource, even for professionals. I think... If you stumble upon something that's really beautiful and amazing and it blows your mind, there's nothing wrong with trying to share that with the right people who might be able to utilize it in a bigger way than you or help you try to surface more information about it. It can also be very dangerous. So, like, I want people to do that kind of fact checking. Like, if you stumble upon some Hong Kong company that you think might be connected to something that you're fascinated in, don't just say it is that. You have to take the time, if you don't have the cash, save up the cash to order those documents. Like, people need to start incorporating those own journalistic discretions into how they decipher what reality is.
I certainly agree. And I think that's how you and I generally try and think. When we find facts, we'll try to source it, verify it, check into these things at least a little bit. And that's helped us then discover even more things about the,
People try to rush out an article as fast as possible because cryptocurrency moves stupid fast, way faster than any other industry I've ever seen. And sometimes it helps to not have to be the one that's breaking it. And if you can take the time to do a much deeper dive, that is actually going to be a much more valuable resource than the breaking news a lot of the time.
That's generally my philosophy. I assume I'm not good enough to be the fastest, so I should spend a little bit of extra time and make it better.
Totally agree. And I work the same exact way as you. It's best to take those longer form deep dives, just examine really what's going on, especially because there are people with the resources and connections who can kind of verify some of this stuff a lot faster than we possibly could, right? Or could at least verify it to the degree they think it's verified.
Yeah, there's certainly people with the network to understand this nuance. So we started with talking about why you wanted to go and see if Bitfinex and Tether have offices. We've discussed why these corporations, both in cryptocurrency and more broadly in the world of shadow and criminal finance, use these type of corporations. Do you have any other closing thoughts?
Yeah, I think that there's a huge value to on-the-ground journalism and journalists, or not journalists, going out, reporting on stuff, and doing their best to report it in the most professional manner as possible, because we live in such an online world now that, yeah, like, a lot of the reporting can be done by just thoroughly reading a court document or going on Open Corporates and trying to shuffle through names and officers and corporate entities. No doubt, most research nowadays doesn't need to be on the ground. But I think there's a huge value to that, especially since COVID and all of this other shit that we've dealt with for the past year. I think that has largely been ignored, and that it's time to bring that back, especially with cryptocurrency, where you have billionaires refusing to be identified as, like, citizens of a country. And we need people actually fact-checking others and going and trying to find out what the fuck is going on.
I think that's a good place to end it.
All right. On that note, join us next time when we discuss who knows what, probably some other cryptocurrency fraud or scam. We'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks for listening.